your name?
Did you hear that? No? Is that one working now? My name is Katrina.
And who brought you to prayer today, Katrina?
My mom.
And tell her to stand up.
Stand up. Her real name is Carol, but most people know her as Orange.
And do you do anything special this summer going on a trip?
Yes. I went to France and Italy, and I went biking in Canada, and I went to a Unitarian camp backpacking in New York.
And what year are you going to school?
I am a junior.
Hi, Judy West.
Say their names and tell them to stand up.
Carol Wecker and Paula Pachares. Can you stand up?
Did you read any good books this summer, Judy?
Yes.
Tell us one.
Erica Skokes.
And who brought you to prayer?
Well, my dad drove me, but my mom's here also. Ken and Judy Skokes. Stand up.
Did you see any good movies this summer, Erica?
Aaron Brockovich is really good.
What year are you going to be in
school? I'll be a junior.
Isaac Lawrence.
And who brought you to prayer today?
Bob Lawrence and Cindy Hawk.
And what year are you going to be in school?
Six.
Six?
Yeah.
And are you going to work special this summer?
I went to Spain and Italy. Toby, my dad, Kyle Wacker, stand up. Fifth. Yeah. Miss Melton. Mm-hmm.
Kate Skog. Ken and Judy Skog.
What year are you going to be in school?
Sophomore.
And what class are you looking forward to this year?
History.
My name is Heather Lawrence. My parents are Bob. I'm a junior.
I imagine you went to Italy also?
Yep, Italy and Spain.
What was the sweetest thing of Italy and Spain? Pick one thing that you like to do yourself.
Well, one of my favorite cities was Florence, Italy.
Because
it had lots of good museums and good ice cream and
gelato?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Allison Owens. My parents are Amy and Rick. I'm a senior.
So what are you looking forward to in school this year?
My favorite class is ceramics.
My name is Hunter Larson. My mom brought me to Prairie and Lori Larson.
And what year are you going to be in school?
I'm already in school.
And what grade would that be?
Second.
Second grade. And what's your favorite thing to do on the playground?
Football. She's Allegra, and she's Allegra Larson. Yeah.
How old is she?
Three.
Special this summer?
We went on a road trip to Maine.
To Maine?
and back through Canada.
And did you read a book on the car on the way there and back?
Yeah.
What did you read?
The Goblet of Fire.
Oh, my God. It's a classic already. Say your name.
Hello, I'm Vincent. And my dad brought me here, John Peterson.
What grade are you in?
I'm in fourth grade. And I'd also like to introduce my sister, which she isn't here because she had to go to a ballet tryout for the Nutcracker.
And what's her name?
Lushana.
And what grade is she in?
Second.
Oh, that is so nice to introduce your sister. I think that's great.
Hi, my name is Tara Converse. My parents are Kathy and Randy Converse.
What grade are you going to?
I'm a senior now.
And what are you looking forward to this year?
I'm going to be helping tutor kids that need help at school, so I'm excited about doing that. Oh, I went to Japan this summer, and France, and Belgium, and the Netherlands.
Oh. Hi, I'm Ian Park, and my parents are Bob and Barb Park. I'm a senior. I'm sure I did. I don't know what I saw, but I saw lots of them. There's some good ones. I saw The Cell. That was pretty cool, like with cinematography and things, but it was pretty disturbing too, so I don't know. I went to Canada and Mexico. Didn't travel quite as far as everyone else, but... But that was fun.
Was it a good time with your siblings?
Yes, it was. It was a very good time.
I'm Brian Cusdas.
Who brings you to Prairie?
My Sodu parents, Judy Skog and Ken.
And what year are you in school?
I'm a freshman. MITC.
And what are you planning to study? Are you planning to study?
So that studying's like a part of school?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, maybe.
And what subject is that?
Electronics.
My name's Alana Pryor Ackerman, and my mom is Ann Pryor. And this summer I went to Hong Kong, Singapore, and India. Okay. Hi. My name is Andrea. And I come here with Bob Lawrence and Cindy Hack. Senior. Yeah, I'm from Chile.
Okay, are those siblings there? Are they sitting in the house?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be back
here. Negatok? No, she's not. It's Maya. Maya's four in preschool. And we didn't go very many places. We just went to Minnesota last week. So it's a good place to go. 400 miles away.
This is Jonah. He's going to be 5 in 2 weeks. And this is his little brother Ezra, who is now 21 months.
And this is the amazing thing about stages, because last year Jonah gave us a little soliloquy.
Yeah.
And this year he's not going to speak. But Ezra wants to.
Say hi.
Okay.
I don't know you, but we could get to know you. Can you say your name?
Mitch.
Who brought you here today?
Doug and Sherry.
Can you make them stand up?
Second.
Did you see the movie or something?
I don't know.
Okay, we got a stand-up comedian. Are you a stand-up comedian? Yeah? Okay. You good, everybody?
You may now walk downstairs as we sing the next song. Before we begin to sing, I'd like for you to look on your, go ahead and stand up, and on the order of service, if you'll notice, the first hymn we sang, which is a good old Lutheran tune, the text was by a Unitarian or a Universalist, Kenneth L. Patton. The Mighty Fortress is Our God, same tune, text, English translation by Henry Hedge, A-U-U. So let's go ahead and sing another version of the same tune. Thank you, Eileen and Mike. And an advance thank you to Shirley's son, David Grindrod, who will be playing later on in the service. Orange Ken and I will begin with brief comments, which we would like to present without interruption. And later I will ask for comments from the congregation. Today's topic came from a service that Warren, my husband, and I saw in South Wayne, Indiana. South Bend, well, one of those South. Thank you, Warren. I did get it wrong. South Bend, Indiana, where we witnessed a moving demonstration of a foot washing that had been practiced in the former church of one of their members. And we're not going to wash feet today, but we will have some good things to say about our religious background. In my childhood Baptist church, I felt wanted and I felt loved. And because I knew right from wrong, and I knew that God would take care of me, I felt secure. So having been wanted, loved, and secure perhaps provided me the emotional courage to explore beyond my childhood religious experiences, and perhaps it made it more difficult. In that same Baptist church, I heard expressive storytelling like we had today, sang joyful hymns, and enthusiastically rose to my feet to very dramatic oratory. Years later, as a singer in Methodist, Catholic, Lutheran, Congregational, and Church of England choirs, I made the rounds, I learned to love antiphonal liturgy and passionate choral music. Now, as a Baptist child, I really prided myself in memorizing Bible verses, not always knowing what they meant. One phrase in particular stuck with me into adulthood, and that was, "Therefore, choose life." I didn't remember who said it or where in the Bible it came from, but I paid attention to it. And in considering what now were moral shades of gray, no longer did I know what was exactly right and wrong, that phrase, "therefore choose life," served me well. This week I finally looked it up and realized I had disconnected it from Moses' directive to the Israelites that they must obey God's laws if they were to remain alive and well in the promised land. Now, as a Unitarian Universalist, I'm obligated to read several translations of the five books of Moses and argue them with a minister, a rabbi, and 15 UUs somewhere out in the natural world to see what else I can glean on my own terms. With that, I'll turn the podium over to Orange.
Thank you, Galita, for inviting me to speak this morning. It's been a subject I've been meditating about. Actually, I had a meditation lesson Friday night with Lisa Glick and promised not to think about anything while I was meditating, so I didn't meditate about it then. hopefully you won't find my mind completely blank this morning, or it'll be a very quiet 5 minutes. My background is, like many Prairie members, rather mixed, and a few years after World War II ended, an Orthodox Jewish boy from the Bronx went to be a counselor at a summer camp, and there he met a blonde Presbyterian from a very small town in New Jersey, and for some reason that was never entirely clear to me, they decided to get married and have me. Not necessarily in that order, but they were very young at the time. My mother was 19 when I was born, and I was the second child, actually. And so they were young, and their marriage ultimately failed. But two things I thought were important. One was they made the decision to raise us in the Jewish faith. And I really respect that, because it's very difficult to raise a child with a foot in both worlds. The other thing that I thought was significant was when I asked my mother why they got married, she said, because we shared similar values. She didn't say that they were physically attracted to each other, but that they had similar moral backgrounds. So it wasn't that far a reach for them to decide to raise us in the Jewish faith, because they didn't feel that their moral backgrounds were that different. Culturally, however, the backgrounds were enormously different, and they made an interesting compromise to raise us as Jews, but in my mother's Presbyterian hometown. So we had to drive 45 minutes to the nearest synagogue, and we were the only Jews in Pennington, New Jersey, where they still to this day think that all Jews are redheads. My mother never converted to Judaism, and of course that means by technical Jewish law that I'm not Jewish, but they raised us as Reformed Jews, which was really their only option without my mother converting. And Reformed Judaism is already a religion of compromise in many cases. It's not as strict as Orthodox Judaism. It allows more assimilation into American culture, and we were obviously very assimilated. Because my parents made that choice, I grew up thinking of myself as Jewish rather than Christian. And as I said, I respect the fact that they made that choice for me. When I was about 12 years old, I had a passionate desire to become a Christian or to think of myself as Christian, because as a pre-adolescent, all my friends were Christian. And the Christians do have the best music. I'm a big fan of gospel music. But morally, I had been raised as a Jew, and I still find that my belief in God and my basic ethics came from the things that I learned in Sunday school. And they're not that different from what I would have learned had I been raised as a Presbyterian, I don't think. But I do feel that I have no relation to Jesus. I mean, when people talk about their
their passion for their savior, and that's something I really don't relate to very well. I also feel a strong heritage from the Jewish side of the family, perhaps because culturally it is a stronger identity. It's a very rich heritage and very beleaguered heritage, so it's one that you don't want to easily let go of. The fact that my father says Kaddish for his parents on the anniversary of their death is very meaningful to me, and someday when my father passes on, I will do that. I think I surprised my parents when I had my confirmation. Confirmation in Reform Judaism, I think, is sophomore year of high school, maybe junior year. I didn't have a bat mitzvah. My brother had a bar mitzvah, but they didn't want to go all out and do it again, I guess. And when I was one of the speakers at our confirmation, and I actually brought my mezuzah along because I was selected as for outstanding achievement and attitude in the confirmation class of 1967. I shared this award with a young man who went on to become an Orthodox rabbi. So I figured they got their money's worth out of him at least. But but it is still something that I treasure because I always felt that I had one foot in both camps, and this kind of showed that I was doing well as a Jew. And I was asked to speak at the confirmation ceremony, and I think I surprised my parents, especially my mother, in my speech, because what I said was that in a world, and this was 1967, many of us were around then and remember what kind of a world that was. It was a confusing time to be a teenager, and not that there is any time that isn't a confusing time to be a teenager. And I said that I viewed my faith as being on the beach with lots of sand moving around, and there was an iron stake on that beach going deep into the earth, and I was holding on to that. And that was very meaningful to me, to have something firm in the world that I could hold on to. And I don't consider myself an active Jew today. My husband was raised congregationalist, or whatever that. And again, we had to make a choice. What would we raise our children? For us, deciding to raise them Unitarian Universalist gave us a compromise that we could commit to, and I feel that it's so important to have some kind of root, something that you can hold on to, and that's been a very meaningful thing to give to my children. The beliefs that I've held on to from Judaism are not very complicated, and when I was thinking about the program, I was thinking of the basic belief of Judaism, which is Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, which is, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. If you believe in God, that's sort of the bare bones part of it, and the kind of Judaism that I took with me allowed me to explore all kinds of other possibilities, even the possibility that I didn't believe in God, although I don't think that the rabbi would have approved of that. But I find it comfortable to be a Unitarian because I can explore all kinds of other additions to that basic belief, but that basic belief is what grounds me in my life.
A few of you may not know me. I'm Ken. I grew up in United Methodist Church in Marquette, Michigan. From a very early age, I realized that it was a kind of a foundation of our family. My father was a member of the board there a number of different times, kind of rotating as we do here at Prairie. And my mom was a Sunday school teacher many times over, on and off through many years. So my foundation, I guess, was going to Sunday school over many years and feeling that I was really part of a community there, although it was kind of a very formal community. Prairie is the other extreme. Prairie is incredibly informal in many ways. But the thing is, as I grew older, the thing that I take away had the most meaning to me was probably my high school years. We had a high school class, and for the entire time that I can remember, we had the same high school teacher. Her name was Beulah West. And she was a very very educated, very knowledgeable person. I really got a sense in the time we spent with her of exploring ideas, both about religion and social ideas, a time of turmoil in our society. We talked about current social issues of the day, civil rights and the threat of nuclear war. So it was a time that I got to think more broadly than just the types of things we were hearing in the sermons, which were fairly, you know, prescriptive, you know, you lead a Christian life. So that is something I carry away in a very strong positive attachment. The other thing that was very strong, and I went to the encyclopedia last night, and I think I realized why this was the case. Methodism was founded by John and Charles Wesley in the 1700s in England. They broke off from the Anglican Church, and the one of the core characteristics, I guess, of Methodism is lots of singing, rousing singing, like a Mighty Fortress Is Our God, kind of, to me, exemplifies the kind of, you know, rousing sort of hymn that we were singing a lot of. And I realize now why that was the case. Charles Wesley wrote 6,000 hymns, and they tried to pack all of them into the hymnal we had. And I actually brought my hymnal with me. That's one of the things we got at confirmation, was that I have my own hymnal with my name engraved on the cover of it. So that indicates, kind of the central role and importance that music had. But also, it was a very formal sort of church. My father grew up Lutheran, and I guess I really don't know if my mother was Methodist or not. I know her mother was a Christian Scientist, so we had... an interesting, story. I learned some of my grandmother's Christian Science beliefs, and my mother was one who did lots of study of the Bible. She went to Bible classes. But they're very prescriptive. Another aspect that I enjoyed quite a bit was the social activities. We had lots of potlucks, just as we do here at Prairie, and there's a good sense of community from that.
Before we turn you guys loose with comments, I'd like to know how many people here who consider themselves Unitarian Universalists, whether or not you're a member or a regular attender, were not brought up as children in UUism. Stand up, let's see. Just stand up. Okay, thank you. That fits pretty much in with a study that was done a few years back, about 20 years ago, I think, that it was roughly 90%. And a study, I guess, is underway now to find out what the case is. I think that's very, very interesting. During the comment period, I'm going to have Aaron, who's a good runner and plays Ultimate Frisbee, go around all around here. You still play Ultimate Frisbee, right? Okay, I wanted just to check that you're in good health, because she's going to be our mic runner. And what I would like to hear is brief comments, because I want as many people as possible to have a chance to talk, brief comments about the good things about the religions in which you were brought up, those of you who came to UUism from other religions. So here, we'll get Aaron's running shoes on. Who would like to start?
I was brought up in a very small Methodist church. My grandparents were there, my parents were there, so I was very known and loved, which was a wonderful advantage. Also, at that time, the Methodist Church was strongly into the social gospel, and I very much valued that. And singing songs like Jesus Loves All the Children of the World, Red or Yellow, Black or White, all are precious in His sight. And if you demythologize that, you're left with a concern for all peoples. And I remember a minister of ours who, during their early 40s, took in a Japanese-American family that couldn't find housing. This family was really being harassed because of the war and so on. So there were many examples like that in our church, which I very much value.
I grew up a Roman Catholic, and my brothers and sisters went to elementary school in the Catholic school. I didn't go till high school, and I was glad to get out of West Junior and go to Edgewood because people weren't putting ice cream cones in my hair and picking on me because I was the third shortest kid in my class. I mean, I grew 4 inches my senior year, just to give you some perspective. I was a lot shorter when I was a kid relative to everybody else. And I enjoyed, and I remember how, you know, cynical some of them were in religion class in high school, and I kind of enjoyed it. And I learned the Bible. You know, they taught the Bible, you know, which is supposedly Catholics don't teach the Bible. Well, they do in Catholic high school anyhow. And I got an appreciation for it, and my mother had a Bible that had Jesus' words in red and everything else in black, and then I started realizing, you know, hey, the red words are really good. You know, the black, you know, that just puts it in context, you know. And I got a kick out of that, and then I tried to get my mother to read it, and she was a little reluctant because there is that kind of Bible thing with Catholics, I guess, but to me, the Bible was a wonderful thing, and Catholic high school was a relief that, you know, people weren't picking on me because I was 5'2". So I enjoyed the experience.
Summer camp and weekend outings to the beach.
I was raised Roman Catholic, and one of the things I loved was the ritual of the Mass and the celebrations of the holidays. I was going to public school, and in fifth grade I was class secretary, but somehow my mother and my teacher, Mrs. Wessenberg, thought something was wrong with me, so they were considering transferring me to Edgewood to sort of fix me up. Well, I guess the semester passed and they decided they didn't need to do that. And I'm very glad that I went to public school because I was exposed to people of all faiths. So that's something that I found was really helpful to me.
If I can, by the way, I just wanted to mention that Ken's talk reminded me of my favorite Riders in the Sky song about this guy who was raised Methodist but grew up and became Buddhist, and wanted and wishes once in a while they'd slip some hymns into that, because the chanting just doesn't do it for him. But I was raised Presbyterian, and there's a lot of ex-Presbyterians that come into the UUA, what I found was that the it was so laid back, at least where I was growing up. It was really kind of hard to tell when I lapsed, and very quickly I just wanted to mention, if you ask people why they left the church and came to something like Unitarian Fellowship, they'll say, "Well, predestination. You know, that's the doctrine that you know you are is determined whether you're going to heaven or hell before you're born. Things like that. People have trouble, a lot of trouble with that, but there's probably not more than 6 Presbyterians alive who actually believe in predestination. That's just one of those things that's still on the books. So I think what you have is you have more Unitarians believing that a Presbyterian has to believe in predestination than you have Presbyterians.
I grew up in the First Presbyterian Church in Syracuse, New York. It was a big, beautiful stone building. I just loved the music there. I was in the junior choir, and I remember we had like 4 choirs, and we would all sing at Christmas and Easter. O Holy Night, with a solo by Barbara Mann. I will never forget that day when I was part of that performance and listening to her solo. And also the Easter music, that song that has the trumpets in the beginning. I don't know. Da, 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 da. That was the best.
Book of Common Prayer, King James Bible, and hymns ancient and modern. This was the Church of England. And 6-7 years ago, I went back to church with my mother, who was getting on in years at the time. And the first lesson was from the Old Testament, as it always is. They started in on this, please don't do this, and we would rather you did not do that. It was a new translation of the Bible, and it was the Ten Commandments. If
I grew up in a Presbyterian church, and I'll be very brief as to the good things I remember. It was the 1-pound box of Christmas candy we got every year.
I grew up in the Catholic Church, and one of my favorite things is the great tapestry of saints. And it's just such a rich, I'm sure a lot of them were taken from pagan mythology, and some of them got defrocked later. but that richness of all these stories is just wonderful. And the second thing was feminism, because I went to Edgewood High School and was taught by the most marvelous set of nuns who really were so well educated. Everybody had master's degrees in those days, the fact that, you know, we could do it. And also, even I was a girl and I was encouraged to take calculus, and I refused, but wasn't because they didn't think it was important.
I was raised in Roman Catholicism in New York, and as a child, what I loved the most was all the paraphernalia, the special prayer book that you got for First Communion, and the outfit, and the rosaries, and the saint statue I got for being the third smartest in third grade. But what I appreciate most now, I think, is the structure of Catholicism as opposed to Protestantism, where if someone has a different set of ideals and beliefs, they break off and start a new denomination. But Catholicism keeps stretching and stretching and stretching, so you have radical right and radical left all within the same denomination. And when I was growing up in high school, some of our religion teachers were Maryknoll seminarians who were up the Hudson River, up in Ossining. And for instance, Roy Bourgeois, who founded the protest that's still going on, started back not when I was in high school, later. But anyway, against the School of the Americas. He came and talked to us because he's a friend of these guys who were friends of my mother's too. So I had this very strong connection with that radical left part of Catholicism, and that I believe I've been the better for that.
Well, he's closer. Can I go reverse order?
Like Orange, I was also raised Jewish and went to Hebrew school and was bar mitzvahed in an Orthodox Jewish synagogue in Milwaukee. I remember many wonderful things, traditions, rituals. One of the things I appreciated later was prior to the evening service in that temple, first of all, the rabbi was a Holocaust survivor, had crawled across Poland through the marshes and swamps and so on to escape, lucky to get away. But before the evening service every day, the rabbi and probably 8 to 10, 12 other men would sit around and have their discussions, which they did about the finer points of the Talmud, studying it, and going over it in great trivial detail, on what you can eat, which way you can walk, what you can do on the Sabbath, blah, 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 very trivial things, and just going into it, on that point, this 12th century rabbi said that, but on the other hand, Rabbi Maimonides in the 13th century said that, and it just seemed at that time, as a pre-adolescent, kind of strange. But later, when I saw Fiddler on the Roof and heard Tevye singing If I Were a Rich Man, and said that one of the things that if he were a rich man, he would love to do more than anything was to study with the learned 7 hours every day, I realized what a wonderful thing that really was, just the opportunity for these older men, many of whom were Holocaust survivors like the rabbi, to be able to, you know, sit there and study this wonderful document that is the basis of the faith, you know, in this great detail. And that was the substance of their lives. So later I realized how wonderful that was, although it was interesting that at the time, watching it, I thought, you know, what's this all about? So that was interesting.
Well, my dad was a Methodist minister, and so I went to church a lot on Sunday anyway. And I realized after I became an adult and I started being politically active and sat in hearings up at the state capitol that one thing I had gotten from attending church all that time was ability to listen and to try to understand what a minister or anybody else was saying. And I realized that because the hearing room was set up very much like my church was, with a podium and kind of a railing like an altar there. And I just caught myself meditating on what the speaker was saying. And I also loved the songs.
With all that emphasis on music, it's a good thing we sounded good today, I think. Nikki Bromberg was unable to be here today, but she did just leave a few words, and I'd like to tell you what she said. We were going to wrap it up with Nikki because she wasn't brought up in other churches, although she went to a whole bunch before she ended up in Unitarianism. But finally, when she was a child, her parents took her, in the 1960s, her parents took her to a UU church in Seattle. And there she was greeted with the music of Simon and Garfunkel, heard a lively discussion on the very relevant topic at that time of drugs, concern about drugs, and could wear whatever she wanted to wear without clothes being a big deal. So Nikki's been a convert ever since, so I just thought I'd pass that on to you. Before we sing the hymn, I'd like you to, and it's on the back of the song sheet that has the words, if you'll just take a look on the left-hand side and notice who wrote the words. This was from a 1909 Christian Science hymnal. I know you have Christian Science background. Anybody else? Someone else said they had some Christian Science background, I thought. Ken. Your grandmother. Okay. So, again, a lot of these were borrowed and passed around. So here is a Christian Science hymn with words by one of our founders, Jose Ballou. Please stand. Started a few years ago a tradition at Prairie where we have an opportunity to share
our joys and concerns, just something that you would like to share with your fellow companions here. Maybe we should do this again.
Hi. It was my great joy to do the cartoon service last Sunday, and I wanted to tell you that there are cartoons from last Sunday out in the hall on the bulletin, or on the stand.
Well, hi. It was our joy last weekend. Unfortunately, we were not able to attend Shirley and Bob's wedding, but that was because we were in Minnesota visiting with some friends that adopted their children at the same time, around the same time that we adopted Maya. So other than the 400-mile drive back in one day with a four-year-old, it was a wonderful trip, but it was great to see them again.
I received a letter from Karen Gross, who's in training with the Peace Corps in the Dominican Republic, and I will be putting her APO box and her email and her parents' address in a future Prairie Fire. She seems to be doing well. She's a little concerned about her Spanish, especially the Dominican Republican style. She's loving the family she's staying with and seems very upbeat about the experience, so I was glad to hear from her.
I'm visiting from Florida, and my joy is that I'm visiting my son Brian and my daughter-in-law Kimberly. So it's a very special occasion.
Our family's gone through some changes in this last year. You met Andrea, who's here, an exchange student from Chile, and our oldest son Raza's begun law school, our second son Aaron at the UW-Madison. So a lot of transformations this year for us.
If they won't say anything, I would like Bob and Shirley to stand up and introduce our newlyweds.
I'd like to say it was a joy for me to talk to my dad on the telephone a couple of days ago. He's been really, really, really sick and just not even able to really talk on the phone, and he just talked to Blue Streak, so that made me feel happy.
Last night, Tara and I went to a Tracy Chapman concert, and it was really encouraging for this young woman who certainly could make megabucks and is a wonderful, wonderful performance to stand up there encouraging people to vote, encouraging, you know, racial harmony and being concerned about people with poverty. So here she was with a packed house, still making a point that she really had some morals and some beliefs that she's incorporating into her music. It was great.
My dad turned 96 Wednesday, and when I called him, he said he couldn't talk long because he had to be with his guests. He has survived Lyme disease and an earthquake in the last year and a half, and next week we will be with him in Montana for my baby brother's wedding. It'll be the first time my three brothers and I and dad have all been together in 6 years, and probably will be the last if our record is anything to say. So we're really looking forward to it, and we feel very lucky indeed.
I had a phone call from Alice Bullen the other day, and one of her sons said, why wait to write a letter? Call him up. So I had a nice talk with her. Lee is apparently having Alzheimer's. You can't diagnose it without an autopsy, I guess, but he is now in a wheelchair because he falls over. And he still knows Alice, and she sees him every day. She's helping him to eat. He's having a little trouble eating. But she seems to be doing real well, and it was so nice to talk to her.
We're some of your non-newlyweds. We're celebrating 51 years. Okay. Okay.
My My daughter Jennifer, who many of you know, lives out in Seattle and just started graduate school. Joy, she just also got a job that she loves at as a program director at the Seattle Children's Museum.
My mom has a condition called sarcoidosis, which is a connective tissue disease, which is mostly affecting her eyes, and she has to have surgery, not this week, but next week, on her good eye to relieve the pressure. But my joy in all of this is that we'll be able to go visit them next weekend, which was something that was planned before she got sick.
I will say one concern is that my daughter started UWM last week, and this week we've had a couple of sniffling conversations, and she's having a little time adjusting, so anyone wants to tell me adjustment stories with happy endings, I would appreciate that.
Okay, and now we have, I'm going to pass the basket. And I see some new faces out there, and we do encourage new people to introduce themselves so we get to know you better, but we don't require it, but we would appreciate it, and I'll try not to stare you down. If you could come forth freely, that would be good. Or we could have people reintroduce themselves if they've only been here once or twice or have been on sabbatical somewhere. Should I do this microphone thing again?
I'm Thatcher Root. My wife and I I was raised Presbyterian. My wife was raised Jewish, and we were married by a UU minister 14 years ago, and we're now exploring, visiting here and bringing our kids and interested in what we're seeing.
And how do you find it?
We've been aware of you from the newspaper, and then your flyer brought us in.
Hi, I'm Sherry, and this is my husband Doug, and our son Mitch was the one who didn't want to talk in the front. He warms up quickly after he gets to know people. But Doug was raised as a Baptist, and I was raised as a Congregational church member, and I guess just kind of similar to you, we're just exploring. So.
Hi, my name is Brian Lavendell, and I'm here with my wife Kimberly and my dad, Bill Schlicht. What he didn't say is that he's visiting me on his way driving from Massachusetts to Florida. So it means a lot that he took a slight detour.
I'm Randy Christensen. I come here about twice a year, so this is my biennial visit, and I brought myself to Prairie today, and I saw a lot of movies this summer.
I'm Dave Grindrod. I'm a fallen Unitarian, and this meeting here reminds me that the great joy that I remember from the Unitarian Fellowship as a child is the fellowship and the warmth, together with the interest in exploring spiritual matters, which I don't think is lacking in Unitarianism. I'm really enjoying being here.
We're glad to meet you all, and we encourage you to stay for snacks and conversation afterwards. And now we have brief Prairie announcements. And you don't get the microphone for announcements.
Next week at 1:00, breaking for lunch.
not going to run around with the microphone, but if you think that you need to make an announcement and you have a soft voice, come on down. Eileen.
I'd like to remind everybody we put information about the poll retreat in the newsletter. It's a visiting day. Are there extra newsletters out there now that people can pick up? Please pick up a newsletter and we invite everyone to join us for a weekend retreat at the Best Horizon in October.
Mary Lou. Schroeder has done some flyers for us for newcomers to read when they come and sit in the service, and also there's one that she invites you to take home. There's some extras out there to give to people that you might know in the community. It's also got some directions on how to get here and a little, you know, we try to summarize who we are, but it's difficult. Judy. The final words today are printed on the back of your order of service, and you will read the words in italics.
They're going to ask people to stand, and the choir is going to be coming up here while we just before you read. Thank you.
It matters what we believe. Some beliefs are like walled gardens. They encourage exclusiveness and the feeling of being especially privileged. Expansive and lead the way into wider and deeper sympathy. Some beliefs are like shadows clouding children's days with fears of unknown calamities.
Other beliefs are like sunshine, blessing children with the warmth of happiness.
Some beliefs are divisive, separating the saved from the unsaved, friends from enemies.
Other beliefs are bonds in a world community where sincere differences beautify the path.
Some beliefs are like blinders, shutting off the power to choose one's own direction.
Other beliefs are like gateways, opening wide vistas for exploration.
Some beliefs weaken a person's selfhood. They blight the growth of resourcefulness.
Other beliefs nurture self-confidence and enrich the feeling of personal worth.
Some beliefs are rigid, like the body of death, impotent in a changing world.
Other beliefs are pliable, like the young sapling, ever growing with the upward thrust of life.